no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, back this Tuesday with another 60 minutes of radio drama brought to you by RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week is from Suspense, aired May 11th, 1950. It's titled The Man in the Room. After that, it's The Adventures of Rocky Jordan and The Bartered Bridegroom, his story from October 31st, 1948.
Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you Mr. John Lund in The Man in the Room, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear.
Carlo, what's the best bait to use for bass?
I don't know, Hap. Better ask an ichthyologist.
An ichthyologist?
An ichthyologist, an expert on fish. When I need information, I believe in going to an expert.
That go for spark plug information, too?
Sure. And who knows more about the best spark plugs for your car than Autolite Ignition Engineers, the men who design and build complete ignition systems, used as original equipment on many makes of America's finest cars.
You mean they know how to build into spark plugs the best in quick-starting, smooth performance and gas mileage, eh, Harlow?
Of course, Hap. That's what's made Autolite the world's largest independent manufacturer of automotive electrical equipment. And it was Autolite engineering know-how that made possible the development of the Autolite resistor spark plug, one of the greatest advances in spark plug design for automotive use in the past 20 years. So, friends, see your friendly Autolite spark plug dealer tomorrow. Have him replace worn-out spark plugs with world-famous ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs. Whether you choose the resistor type or the regular type, you'll be right, because you're always right with Autolite.
And now, with the man in the room and the performance of John Lund, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
When I was 10... I first read Edgar Allan Poe's story of the miraculous room. The room whose terrible walls closed slowly in upon their prisoner made a deep impression upon me. My most persistent nightmare was that I was the poor devil in the story. I didn't know then that he had been impressed by it too, and that someday I would actually be the man in the room. Excuse me. Can you tell me what floor Miss Markham is on?
Miss Markham? What do you want with her?
Why, I want her to do some work for me. She does typing, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm. Third floor. Step in.
Thank you.
You're a writer?
Yes.
What do you write?
Stories, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Sell them?
Occasionally.
Mm-hmm. She's down at the end of the hall where you see the door open.
Thank you very much.
Oh, come in, please.
Thank you. Miss Markham?
That's right. What can I do for you?
I saw your ad in the paper. I thought perhaps you could do some work for me.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. What is it? Typing? Mimeographing?
Typing. Manuscript.
You're a writer?
Yes.
Would you shut the door, please?
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Thank you. You'll find that I do absolutely perfect work, and at the most reasonable rates. I've had many years of experience, although not in this city. I've just recently moved here. Will you have much for me to do?
Well, that depends. Frankly, Miss Markham, the price is a factor with me. You see, I'm a freelance writer, and at best, that's a precarious occupation.
I see. Well, is 30 cents a page too much?
Why?
25.
I was about to say that 30 seemed extremely reasonable.
Well, I've already said 25, so we'll leave it at that.
You're very kind.
Not at all. Excuse me, please.
Was Was that the elevator man running down the hall?
Well, no. I didn't see anyone. It's been a lovely day, hasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it has.
I think the weather is so perfect here. I know I'm going to love this city. It's so difficult coming to a new place and trying to establish oneself, especially so late in life. But I think things are going to work out fine.
I hope so.
Would you like to leave your manuscript now?
Yes, here it is.
Oh, thank you. Yes, 40 pages. I'll have that ready for you day after tomorrow.
Oh, that'll be fine. I'll come back and pick it up then. I left the office and rang for the elevator. The old man who ran it didn't speak to me on the way down, but I stood in the back of the car and looked him over carefully. He was a funny little old duck, almost dwarf-sized, with shoulders so rounded he was nearly humpbacked. I was sure he was the one who had been listening at the door upstairs. But, after all, it was none of my affair. 2 days later, I returned to the old office building to pick up my manuscript.
You come to pick up your typing?
Yes.
Here it is. She left it for you.
Oh. Well, I've got to go up anyway. I have some more work for Miss Markham.
I'll take it. She don't want to be disturbed.
Well,
Just give it here.
All right. I gave him the manuscript and left. Several days later, when I returned, he had the completed work ready for me, down on the first floor. That's the way it went on the other occasions when I had typing for Miss Markham to do. The old man took it from me downstairs and had it ready for me when I returned. There was always a reason for me not to go upstairs. Miss Markham was working and didn't want to be disturbed. Or she just left for lunch. Or she wasn't down that day because of illness. One day, when I came to pick up some material, the elevator was not down on the first floor, and my curiosity got the better of me. Instead of ringing, I took the stairs and walked up to the third floor.
Oh, it's you.
Where's Miss Markham?
She ain't here. You can see she ain't.
Yes. Are you typing?
Sure. I help her out sometimes. She's sick today.
Oh, I see.
I just finished your story.
That's fine.
It won't sell, though.
What?
I say it won't sell. It's clumsy.
Oh, you think so?
Yes. It's all hodgepodge. You write too fast.
Well, I'm sorry you don't like it, but if you'll just put it together, I'll send it off anyway.
All right. But it won't sell.
That night at home, I'd been working for hours on a plot for a mystery story and was having absolutely no luck. I simply couldn't concentrate. Then I had a thought. How would it be to use Miss Markham and the elevator man as the basis for a story? Just take the situation as it stood now and fabricate the rest of the plot from there. Let's see. The old man could have murdered her and hidden the body. Possibly he'd done it immediately after I'd seen her last, and she'd been dead all this time. I even made up a fine name for the elevator man. I called him Dracklin. But for the life of me, I couldn't build a story. Why had he killed her? What had he done with the body? The plot wouldn't move. And yet somehow I couldn't discard it and try another. I knew that I was stuck with it until I worked it out. Well, how about the reality? What had happened to Miss Markham? Why hadn't I seen her for over 2 weeks? The only thing to do, I decided, was to find out more about the real situation. Perhaps I could evolve something from that.
Hello?
Hello, George? Bert.
Oh, how are you, Bertie, old boy?
Fine. Listen, George, who does your typing?
My typing? Why, Harrison Lewis.
Oh, yes, at 50 cents a page. I forgot you were rich.
Why?
Well, I thought perhaps you'd seen the same ad in the paper that I did. A Miss Markham. She's been doing some work for me.
Markham? No, I didn't see it. Well, why? Is she any good?
Oh, yes, she's very good.
Well, what does she charge?
30 cents a page.
Hey, that is cheap. Maybe I'll switch. Where's she located?
202 West Olive. Why don't you go up and see her anyway? Let me know what she says.
All right, I'll go in the morning.
Fine. Goodbye, George.
The next morning, I called information and got Miss Markham's office number. It was not yet listed in the directory. I called the number, somehow knowing there would be no answer.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Miss Markham?
Yes?
Well, this is Mr. Freeland. I heard you were ill yesterday. Just thought I'd call and see how you were.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you very much. I'm feeling much better today.
Oh, I'm glad. I expect to have some more work for you at the end of the week.
All right. Just bring it in.
I will. And oh, yes, Miss Markham, I haven't received a bill from you yet. Would you send one soon?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Goodbye, Miss Markham.
Goodbye.
I hung up thinking, well, there goes my plot into a cocked hat. I realized then that I had begun to believe something had happened to Miss Markham. Talked myself into it, I guess. Confused the fiction with the reality. But just because she was alive and well, that was no reason why I couldn't still build a good story from the same idea. Now, let's see. Gracklin had killed Miss Markham and hidden the body. But when I called up, she answered. No, I couldn't use that. But wait a minute. Why couldn't I? Why, certainly, there was the twist. Sure, Gracklin gets another woman to impersonate Miss Markham. The only ones he'd have to worry about would be the people who had seen the first Miss Markham. Well, that's the way my story would go anyway. I sat down at my typewriter and made it sing for a couple of hours. The story was coming along fine. Only thing I needed was some background on Gracklin. Well, nothing like the source. At about 4:30 that afternoon, I was down on West Olive Street near the 202 building. At about 5, Gracklin came out and started up the street. He got on a bus, so I looked around for a cab. Cabby, you taken?
Nah, hop in.
Good. Listen, follow that bus, but not too close. I'll tell you when to stop.
Okay.
He stayed on that bus all the way to the end of the line. I got out of the cab about a block before the final bus stop and saw the old man get off. It was almost prairie here. Large vacant lots and only a few scattered houses. He entered one of them. After about 20 minutes, when it was getting dark, I walked slowly up to the place. There was a light around in back. I went quietly along the side of the house to the window. I looked in. There sat Gracklin, bent over a table, writing with a quill pen. But it was the room that surprised me. The walls were filled from floor to ceiling with books. Heavy, scholarly books. And then I saw it. On a smaller table against the wall stood her picture. She was younger in the photo and prettier, but it was unmistakably she. Miss Markham.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. John Lund in The Man in the Room. Tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Carlo, do ichthyologists and zoologists have anything in common?
Well, in a way, Hap. You see, any kind of an ologist is an expert in his field.
Well, I guess that makes you a spark plugologist, hey, Wilcox?
Well, not exactly. I'm more of a gabologist. The real experts are the Autolite ignition engineers. They design and build complete ignition systems for use as original equipment on many makes of America's finest cars. So naturally, they've built spark plugs that will work as a team with the ignition systems. Spark plugs that are unexcelled for quick starting, smooth performance, and gas mileage.
Sounds logical.
Of course. And these same Autolite engineers developed the famous Autolite resistor spark plug, one of the greatest advances in spark plug design for automotive use in the past 20 years.
They're experts, all right, Harlow.
So, friends, see your friendly Autolite spark plug dealer tomorrow. Have him replace worn-out spark plugs with ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs. Whether you choose the resistor type or the regular type, you can't buy a better spark plug for your car because you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage our star, John Lund, in The Man in the Room, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
In the next morning's mail was her bill, but there was a mistake. She charged me 40 cents a page. So I put on my coat and started downtown. As I walked up Olive Street, I wondered if Dracklin would let me up to see Miss Markham. If it were in my story, he couldn't, because I'd immediately recognize her as another woman. Three, please.
Watch your step.
Miss Markham is in today?
Yep.
You know, I haven't seen her for some time. She's always been out or sick or something.
That's so?
Certainly it's so. You were the one who kept telling me.
Oh, well, I can't remember everybody who comes in here.
Oh, I shouldn't think it'd be too hard. I'll bet not over 10 people a day come in here. This is the most deserted office building I've ever seen.
Well, sometimes it is a little quiet. You know where it is?
Yes.
Come in.
Miss Markham. You are Miss Markham.
Yes, of course. Why?
Oh, no reason. I'm a little confused. Been writing too much lately, I guess.
Oh.
Well, the reason I came down is because of your bill.
There's a mistake.
But don't you remember you said you were going to charge me 25 cents a page? But your bill says 40.
Oh, yes, I do remember now. That's right, 25. The error is mine. I'll change it. I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I wasn't worried about it. If you'd like to refigure it, I can leave you a check right now.
Do you possibly have the cash?
Well, let's see. Yes? Yes, I think I do. Would you prefer that?
If you don't mind.
I paid the bill and went home. Back to my story. My story that had turned out to be pure fiction after all. Miss Markham was alive and well and back in her office, looking just as she had the first time I saw her. Well, I had used all of the real situation I could, and from now on I was operating on pure imagination. Let's see. Hey, wait a minute. Just because she looks the same doesn't mean she's the same woman. She was a twin, see? The first Miss Markham's twin sister. And Gracklin was, their brother. Why had he killed the first Miss Markham? Well, for money, her life savings. That was always a good motive. And the twin sister was in on it and would split with him. Fine. I rattled off the story and the next morning brought it in to be typed.
Good morning, Mr. Freeland.
Good morning, Miss Markham. Got another story for you.
Oh? Well, I'm not sure that I can start on anything right now. I'm closing up the office, you know.
Oh?
Oh, yes. This climate doesn't agree with me at all. As a matter of fact, I never did like city life.
You've evidently changed your mind about things.
I beg your pardon?
Remember the first day you came up here? You were telling me how well you liked our city and the weather?
Oh, yes. Well, you can always depend on a woman, can't you?
Yeah, I guess so. I really wish you could finish this story for me. It's not very long.
Oh?
Only about 28 pages.
I see. Well, perhaps I can rush it out. I sort of feel that I owe you something anyway.
Why?
For being so nice about that mistake I made on your bill.
Oh, that was nothing.
Well, leave the manuscript here, and I'll try to have it done by tomorrow afternoon. Tomorrow's my last day. Come in about 2:00.
Right. And thanks a lot, Miss Markham. The next day was Saturday. And if the building had seemed deserted on other days, it had really been a beehive compared to 2:00 on Saturday afternoon. Now it was a morgue. When I entered Miss Markham's office, she was standing there holding a sheaf of papers.
Mr. Freeland, where did you ever get the idea for that story?
Oh, well, I hope it didn't disturb you, but I was desperate for a plot, and I guess I just let my imagination run wild.
I see. Well, I'll just put it in an envelope.
Thank you. And I'll pay you now, because I probably won't see you again.
That's right. You probably won't. Well, I guess I'll just say goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Markham, and good luck.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Gracklin was waiting for me there on the third floor. He had probably just stayed there while I was in the office. I got in the elevator and he closed the door.
Get your story, Mr. Freeland?
Huh? Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
Not a bad story. Miss Markham, let me read it.
Oh?
But it needs rewriting.
Oh, is that so?
Yes. Like I told you before, Mr. Freeland, you write too fast. You aren't careful enough with reality.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Well, now that part about hiding the body in the elevator shaft, for instance. You almost had a good thing there, but I could tell you've never been in an elevator shaft. Have you?
Why, no. You've passed the first floor.
Let's go down a bit. I'd like to show you something. This is the basement.
Yes. Yes, I see.
You notice how the air gets closer as you go down? It's little touches like that that make a story real.
Yes.
Sub-basement. Mr. Freeland, would you like to see what an elevator shaft looks like?
Well, I...
Come on, it's very interesting, especially for a writer.
All right.
Fine, follow me. Now, we'll just go down these stairs on your left. There's only a few of them, but they're kind of dark. Be careful.
I will.
Wouldn't want you to fall. Now, we go through this little steel door. After you, Mr. Freeland.
Thank you.
I see. This is what the bottom of an elevator shaft looks like.
Yes, yes, it is interesting.
You could make all kinds of noise down here and no one would know.
Well.
Now, about your story. You had me, I mean Gratlin, bury the woman in the floor of the shaft. Now, that would never do.
No?
No. If you dug a grave down here, the inspector would find it in a minute.
Oh.
Yes. The inspector's very sharp. Very sharp. But in the wall.
The wall?
Yes. See those bricks? Now, if I go to exactly the right place, look, I can pull several of them right out. And after I've got all the loose ones out, there's a regular cavity been dug out behind them. Come here. Look for yourself.
Huh? Miss Markham!
Yes. See how snugly she fits in there? I spent a long time digging that hole.
She's dead. You killed her.
Yes. Didn't you really know? I just put these bricks back now. You had some of the things quite right. The woman upstairs is Millie, her twin sister. This one's name is Dorothy. I married Dorothy, but I should have married Millie. You see, Mr. Freeland, I am a writer, too. More than a writer, a poet. But I didn't sell anything, and Dorothy lost faith in me. She typed stories for hacks like yourself, while I had to turn to running an elevator. She caused me to lose faith in myself. Finally, Dorothy left me and came here. I followed her and got a job in the same building. At last, I did what I'd wanted to do for years. I killed her. When I told Millie, she said I'd done quite right, and she came here to help me.
You're insane.
No, Mr. Freeland. I am a poet.
I'm getting out of here.
No, I don't think you are, Mr. Freeland. Are you surprised how strong I am? I've done many things in my time, even if it waits in a circus.
You madman.
No, don't try to get up, Mr. Freeland, or I'll just have to knock you down again. You see, I've got something quite interesting in store for you. You remember Edgar Allan Poe's wonderful story about the man in the room that got smaller and smaller until it would crush the life out of him?
What are you talking about?
Well, Mr. Freeland, I have such a room. You're in it now. The walls won't move, but the ceiling will. Look above you. Most elevators won't go all the way to the bottom of the shaft, but this one will. I fixed it.
Get out of my way, you lunatic!
I warned you, Mr. Freeland! This.
A crushing blow, and I dropped to the ground, stunned.
And you were wrong on my name. It's Al Jones.
Then he jumped out of the door and slammed it shut. I staggered to it, but there was no knob or latch of any kind on the inside. It was smooth and flush with the wall.
I heard his footsteps running up the stairs. Then I heard them above me, in the elevator. Then came a sound that drove me to panic. Racklin! Stop! You'll never get away with two murders! You'll go to the electric chair! Racklin! Listen, listen. I won't tell anybody about Miss Markham. I'll tear up the story! Racklin! I sank to my knees. Still it came on. Then I fell flat on my face. And still it came, closer and closer. Only inches away now. Desperately, I flung out my arms to flatten myself close to the ground. And my hands touched the bricks of the wall. Found one of the loose ones. Without knowing what I was doing, I clawed at the loose brick and pulled it out a little. Then, miraculously, the elevator hung suspended. The side of it caught on the brick. I knew it wouldn't be stopped for long. Already the side of the elevator was grinding into the brick, and in a moment it would break it and come pressing down upon me like an ant. But then, I heard a new sound. The elevator stopped crushing into the brick now and hung motionless. He'd evidently shut off the power. He was trying to make up his mind what to do. Suddenly, the elevator lifted. I saw it going up and up, away from me. And then, I don't remember. I must have fainted. The next thing I knew, two policemen were holding me up, asking me questions. I told them something of what had happened. And then I asked him about the elevator man.
Oh, him? Well, we sent him off in the wagon. It was a funny thing. You see, there was this guy from some publisher, I think he was, came here to tell this elevator guy they'd won some big poetry contest. Well, this fellow from the publisher waited around upstairs and finally started pressing the buzzer. When the elevator came up, the old man jumped out, knocked the publisher guy down, and then went running out into the street. That's when we got him. After we sent him off, we came back to investigate. We found you.
Really? Really?
Well, that's about all there was to it. Except that old Dracklin really was a pretty good writer, I guess. Because I made the changes he suggested. And you know what? I sold the story.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. John Lund.
Hello. Got another poem for you.
Okay.
Harlow Wilcox, the car owner's delight, awoke one night from a deep dream of...
Autolite. But let's be more specific, Hap. I dreamed that every car in America was equipped with world-famous ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs. And you know, spark plugs are only one of more than 400 products made by Autolite for cars, trucks, planes, and boats in 28 plants coast to coast. These include complete electrical systems used as original equipment on many makes of America's finest cars. Spark plugs, batteries, generators, coils, distributors, electric windshield wipers, starting motors, bullseye sealed beam headlights. All engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're a perfect team. So, friends, don't accept electrical parts supposed to be as good. Ask for and insist on Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite. Next Thursday for Suspense, our star will be Miss Claire Trevor. The play is called Angel Face, and it is, as we say,
a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tonight's Suspense play was produced and edited by William Spear and directed by Norman MacDonald. Music for Suspense is composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The Man in the Room is an original play written for radio by William Idelson and Mary Castle. John Lund is currently being co-starred with Barbara Stanwyck in the Paramount picture No Man of Her Own. In the coming weeks, you will hear such stars as Charles Boyer, Edward G. Robinson, Jack Carson, and Dennis O'Keefe. And don't forget, next Thursday, same time, Autolite will present Suspense, starring Claire Trevor.
buy world-famous Autolite resistor or regular spark plugs, Autolite Stayful batteries, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
In spite of better food supplies, millions are still starving in Europe and Japan. The need is particularly acute in Free Berlin. Send your contributions to CARE, C-A-R-E, New York. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Time now for Rocky Jordan.
It was a hot afternoon in Cairo when she walked into the Cafe Tambourine. She was beautiful, but there was something else. Something so wrong with the picture that I couldn't take my eyes off her. It wasn't the blonde hair piled on top of her head, or the dress that clung to her like a football player covering a fumble, nor even the set expression on her face. But when she stopped in front of me, I knew what it was. She was all woman, but not an inch under 6 feet four.
Again, we bring you a story of adventure with a man named Rocky Jordan, proprietor of the Cafe Tambourine in Cairo. Cairo, gateway to the ancient East, where modern life unfolds against the backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, The Bartered Bridegroom.
We've had a pretty fair assortment of customers in the Tambourine. Almost anything on feet. But when I looked up into that icy-faced 6 feet four blonde female, I knew we had our first Amazon.
You're ready, Mr. Jordan?
Ready?
You're wasting time, Jordan.
I didn't catch the name.
Lily Karev. You're being rude.
The face is familiar. Maybe we met in Istanbul.
No, Jordan.
Alexandria, maybe?
The arrangements are made. You're stalling.
Look, suppose we take it from the top of the page, Miss Carroll.
Naturally, you're interested in the money. This, too, has been taken care of. Now about the ceremony.
Ceremony?
The wedding. Be there in an hour.
Oh, sure, I'll be there in plenty of time. I'm a great believer in weddings. Oh, by the way, who's getting married?
I am, Mr. Jordan. To you.
Maybe we'd better go into my office.
That will not be necessary. Timmy Rogers has made all the arrangements.
Timmy Rogers? Now I know we'd better go into the office. She sat across the desk from me and lit a king-sized cigarette. The hand that held the match wore a queen-sized diamond. It sent a reflection against the wall. I didn't like the way the reflection quivered. Her face was under control, but her hands gave her away. She was a nervous bride.
Timmy should have explained these details.
If I know Timmy Rogers, he doesn't bother with details.
That's unfortunate. Nevertheless, in 1 hour, you and I shall be married. You will receive $5,000. Is that clear?
Oh, very.
It is not enough money?
Oh, it's not entirely it, Miss Karoff, having never been married before.
You are being rude again. I plan to leave Cairo immediately after the ceremony.
Really? Tell me, Miss Karoff, where are we going on our honeymoon?
Enough, Jordan. I will not be insulted further. You will receive the $5,000 as soon as I have sold my interest in the Club Fichard.
Fichard? Oh, yeah, now I remember. You and Mike Sloan bought that together recently.
Yes, but I am selling my interest.
What's the matter, business falling off?
No, not business. You see, I'm a white Russian. Certain of my friends have been disappearing lately. I do not wish the same thing to happen to me.
I see.
This is not what I came to talk about. Now, the wedding...
Look, Lily, I've got news for you. I'm not in the mood for marriage.
Your moods do not interest me, Jordan. You are going to marry me.
Well, I'll admit you're more persuasive with a gun.
You will not refuse me.
Maybe it didn't occur to you, Lil, but you can't marry a dead man. Come on, put the gun away.
There are many other ways to make certain you do not back out. Jordan, be at my club in 1 hour. It means your life.
Oh. She moved out of the office as silently as an Arab folding his tent. I followed her out in time to see her climb into a black sedan 2 feet shorter than the Queen Mary. It faded off into the crowded street. I stood there trying to figure out where I could rent a tux cheap when a hand thumped against my back. I turned to see a watered-down version of Tyrone Power, all of 5'5" in his elevated shoes. It was none other than the little fixer himself, Timmy Rogers.
Rocky, old kid, I just saw her leaving. Congratulations, kid.
This makes my day complete.
I'm so happy for you, kid. You'll make a lovely bridegroom.
Slow down, kid. You're drooling on my wedding suit.
What a woman. You're a picker, Jordan, if I ever saw one.
Aren't you forgetting one little item? You picked her, not me.
A mere formality. Greatest girl this side of Minsk.
Well, at least the biggest.
But Rock, kid, for $2,000, how can you miss?
It's even less interesting for
$2,000. Huh? How's that, Rock?
Lily offered me $5,000.
Well, what do you know? She really must be scared.
Okay, suppose you give me the straight story.
Well, Rock, I'll tell you.
Still listening?
Well, look, why don't you and I go into the bar for a drink, Rock, and I'll tell you all about it.
I followed the little man into the bar. We pulled up in a couple of empty stools by the open front door. Timmy Rogers rubbed his hands, licked his lips, and ordered a double orange blossom.
Orange blossom for a wedding day, huh, Rock? Now, where was I?
You and Lily Karoff, remember?
Yeah. Well, sir, Rock, it's like this. Lil has a few roulette wheels out in the back room of her joint, as you know.
Mm.
The other night, I ran into as tough a streak of luck as has been seen in Cairo since Happy Harper was picked up for trying to sell some tourists the Sphinx.
How much?
I dropped $5,000, which it just so happens I couldn't cover at the bank.
Mm-hmm. So then came Lily.
Yeah. Lily made me a proposition. She'll forget the $5,000 if I marry her.
Sure.
But it turns out she's looking for an American. She wants a ticket to the USA.
Oh, that pitch, huh?
Well, can't say that I blame her, Rock. Things can get pretty rough around Cairo for the wrong...
Hey, hold it.
Huh?
That guy's been staring at me too long. Standing there in the open doorway was a brown suit full of balloon-shaped Egyptian. His eyes didn't leave my face as he hooked his cane over one arm and smoothed his white gloves with his hand. He tipped the brown bowler on his fat head and waddled toward me.
You are Mr. Rocky Jordan?
Yeah?
I am Mahmoud Pasha. My card.
What's on your mind?
I will not waste time. Mr. Jordan, regarding your coming marriage to Miss Lily Karoff.
Oh, I suppose you're the bride's father.
Indeed, I am not. My affection for Miss Karoff is not paternal. I have come to offer you $10,000 if you do not go through with this wedding.
Ten? It's the best offer I've had all day.
In cash, Mr. Jordan.
If it makes you feel any better, Pasha, you can forget... I hit the floor fast. Over my head, the big mirror behind the bar shattered and rained glass. When the rain stopped, I jumped up and raced for the door. Outside, there was a dent in the usual late afternoon traffic, and down the street shot a black sedan. It was the same car Lily Karoff had stepped into 15 minutes ago. Well, that gave me something to think about as I walked back into my cafe to survey the damage. A man in the brown bowler had vanished. Underneath a table, his broken cocktail glass in his hand, was Timmy Rogers. I helped him to his feet. All right, little man, fit that into your patch story.
I had nothing to do with it, Rocky, so help me.
You'll have to do better than that.
Rock, listen. I didn't know Lily would go that far.
Wasn't Lily. She may be in a hurry for a wedding, but she doesn't want to marry a corpse.
Well, maybe she was only trying to scare you, Rock.
Could be, but I don't like her idea of a wedding invitation. Come on, let's go.
What are you going to do, Rocky?
I'm going to pay my respects to the bride. It started with an Amazon looking for a husband, and then a two-bit gambler with a sense of humor. Then in comes a fat man in a brown bowler who wants to pay for no wedding at all. Rocky Jordan, bartered bridegroom. I shoved Timmy Rogers into a cab and hopped in behind him. I gave the cabbie the address, Club Fashad. 10 minutes later, we pulled up in front of a big streamlined white building. I paid the driver and we got out. The sign on the door said not open until 7 o'clock. Sometimes you can't believe in signs. Coming down the corridor was a slim, tux character named Mike Sloan, manager and co-owner of the Club Fashad. A nasty smile cracked his face. Oh, I'd seen Sloan kicking around Cairo before. I didn't like him. I like him even less now.
Well, Rocky Jordan, congratulations.
Listen, Sloan, I didn't come here for
anything. Oh, now, don't bother to explain, Jordan. I understand. You got our wedding invitation?
Oh, sure. The bride wore a 38.
Lily is sometimes a little impulsive, Jordan. After all, no one was hurt.
But you'll get a bill for that mirror.
We're ready for the wedding. You're wasting time.
It's off, Sloan. Couldn't find the right size wedding cake.
Rogers, what about that? I thought Jordan was all lined up.
I did my best, Mike.
You're not backing out of it now, Jordan. Let's go. The bride's waiting.
Pack her in ice. She'll keep. I'm out of it.
Too easy, Jordan. Not a chance.
Just watch me.
Rocky, listen, you're making a mistake.
You sure are, Jordan.
Oh, I see. It's going to be one of those shotgun affairs, huh?
Oh, well, I wouldn't want to have to kill you. This way, Jordan.
The gun in Mike Sloan's hand didn't move. It buried itself into the middle of my spine. Timmy Rogers wrung his hands and trailed along behind us. Sloan walked me down a thick carpeted corridor, and we turned left into the main office of the Club Fashad. The blinds were drawn. Sloan slammed the door behind us. Coming toward me from the other side of the room was Lily Karoff, with gold earrings swinging like pendants. She was poured into a glaring red dress that revealed an awful lot of the new look.
Well, Jordan, I see you couldn't pass up the money.
Tell your boy Sloan to get the gun out of my back, and I'll show you how fast I can pass it up.
Mike, is everything prepared?
Ready and waiting, Lily. In fact...
Lily, my flower. Lily, what's happening?
It was the balloon-shaped Egyptian in the brown bowler, his cane still draped gracefully over one arm. As he paddled toward us, his mouth fell open. Inside was a small fortune in gold fillings.
What are they doing to you, my delicate Lily?
Ahmed, please leave at once. I do not need your help.
But, my Lily, I'm here to protect you. These men, they are making a fool of you. Do not believe
Get me. Out of here, Pasha. This is out of your range.
Please, Lily, my blossom, I beg you to see reason. These men, they only mean to do you harm. The lights! Where are the lights? Help!
The room was a pool of black ink. I dived for the spot where Sloan had stood with the gun. I felt hot air on my neck and turned. The carpet came up and made a fuzzy pillow for my cheek as everything folded into a nightmare of spinning rooms. And somewhere off in the distance, I heard the toll of wedding bells.
Tonight's story continues in just a moment. We're sure you listeners, many of whom have written letters to CBS, are happy to know that Rocky Jordan is back on the air. Yes, Rocky Jordan joins one of the most outstanding mystery lineups in radio. Over your CBS station every Sunday night, you'll hear not only Rocky Jordan, but Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's Great Private Eye, and The Whistler, one of the most popular shows on the air. Remember, this half hour, each Sunday evening, will be the time for Rocky Jordan. Now, back to tonight's story, The Bartered Bridegroom.
It was still the office of Lily Karoff. I opened my eyes into a stream of water cascading down my nose. It was coming from a big white pitcher. Holding the pitcher was Sam Sabaya, Captain, Cairo Police.
Well, Jordan. You know, Jordan, on you, this carpet looks very good.
I wish I could say the same thing for my head. What happened, Sam?
Nothing unusual for you, Jordan. Only murder. Look, beside you.
Lily.
Miss Lily Karoff, quite dead.
Like a model for a detective magazine cover.
Mm. Only she is not posing, Jordan.
Okay, Sam. Am I booked?
Not yet, Jordan. Not yet.
The dialogue wasn't exactly sparkling on the way to the Cairo jail. Sam confined himself to a few official grunts, and I sat back and watched traffic. In 10 minutes, we pulled up to a sand-colored building, and Sabaya and I got out. I followed Sam to a small back room. He closed the door and pulled up a couple of chairs.
Coffee, Jordan?
Oh, I need more than coffee, Sam.
But we serve only coffee here.
Sorry.
Now, please tell me everything.
Beginning when?
The police received an anonymous phone call to come to the Club Fachad at once. I arrived to find the body of Lily Karloff shot to death. The gun that apparently killed her was in your hand.
Oh, you tell it much better, Sam. Go ahead, go ahead.
Never mind, Jordan. I'm waiting for your story.
All right, I'll make it brief. Lily came by my office this afternoon with the idea of marrying me. She said something about wanting to leave the country.
Leave the country?
Yes, she's a white Russian, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Said certain friends of hers had been disappearing lately. Hey, underground stuff, maybe, huh?
Yeah, underground, of course. Very likely.
Well, that's what the lady said, Sam.
The lady deceived you, Jordan. I will show you. Now, here we are. A complete report on any and all underground activities in Cairo in the past year. Look, not one case of unexplained disappearance, as you call it.
Well, Sam, a good job wouldn't leave a case history for the police.
Jordan, I'm afraid you have been taken in by this fantastic story.
Live and learn. Well, anyway, after Lily, my next caller was Timmy Rogers. He's a small-time gambler. He gave Lily the idea about marrying me.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Then a short, fat man in a brown bowler shows up. Lily's stage door Johnny. He tries to buy me out of the marriage.
Jordan, I'm trying very hard to believe you.
So then Mike Sloan, one of Lily's boys, shot up my place just so I wouldn't forget. It's my wedding day. All right, I went to Lily's to set everybody straight, and that's where you found me.
Jordan, what about this man in the brown bowler?
His name is Ahmed Pasha. We got anything on him, Sam?
Certainly, Jordan. Ahmed Pasha happens to be one of the richest men in Cairo.
Yeah, but...
And the most respected. He is a business broker of high reputation. He buys and sells business enterprises.
Like nightclubs?
And why not? Jordan, you are beginning to waste my time. It is not likely that you killed Lily and then struck yourself on the head. Therefore, I shall release you with the usual warning. Jordan, do not...
Oh, not again, Sam. I've heard that speech before. No, I'm not leaving Cairo. I like it here. I strolled out of Sam's office and onto the busy street. The neon signs were beginning to light up, which reminded me that the night crowd would be moving into the Cafe Tambourine. But there was one little matter that came before business. Murder. I was only a block away from the station when a small character stepped out of a darkened doorway.
Well, 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 Rock, old kid, I've been looking all over for you.
Why don't you try the other side of town?
Listen, Rock, I didn't know it would turn out this way. I just read the extra about Lily. Look, Rock, you gotta believe me. I ran out of Lily's place the minute the lights went out. I didn't know about it till later.
Sam Sabaya might like to hear that story.
Look, Rock, I saw something in that room. You know who turned out those lights? Sloan did it. I saw him.
It's not news, little man. But Mike Sloan has some answers, and that's the man I'm going
to
see.
But, Rock, he wouldn't be hanging around the facade. Maybe we ought to go back to your place and get a drink first, huh?
Hey, maybe you're right for once in your life. You give me an idea. Timmy Rogers and I headed back to the Cafe Tambourine. At every corner, Timmy looked four ways before crossing the street. It was exactly 7:30 when we walked in the front door. I worked my way through the crowded tables toward my office. Jimmy Rogers hung on my coattail like a scared kid at a bargain counter. I opened the door. Just as the books were beginning to balance, I knew I had to throw them all out of the window. Sitting behind my desk was the man I was looking for, Mike Sloan. He was dead. Three holes neatly punctured the starched white shirt front of his tuxedo.
Rocky, is he dead?
Shut the door.
Rock, what's that?
It's a calling card. Sloan had it crumpled in his hand.
Gee, Rock, let me see.
Yeah, not so fast. Here.
What? There's nothing on it. Just a dirty orange spot.
Try turning it over, Timmy. Makes more sense that way.
Rock, it says Ahmed Pasha.
You guessed it. It's his calling card.
Then that means Ahmed Pasha left it there?
Well, not likely. Maybe Sloan was trying to tell us something.
You're right, Rocky. Sure. Ahmed Pasha was in love with Lily and she wouldn't have him. So when he couldn't stop the wedding, he killed her.
And Sloan saw him do it. It fits that way.
Yeah, maybe it does, Rocky. What are you going to do now?
Find Ahmed Pasha.
Well, I don't know, Rocky. The Pasha didn't strike me as that kind of a guy. Maybe we're jumping to conclusions, Rocky, huh?
Maybe not.
Well, I don't know. That isn't much proof. Ahmed Pasha just doesn't look like the kind of person who would commit murder. Are you going to call Sabaya?
Yeah, later. There's one other call I'm going to make first.
Where's that, Rock?
The card says office number 17 Cadru Street.
Well, pretty late for calling at Pasha's office, isn't it, Rock?
Just a hunch, that's all. Coming with me?
Yeah, well, okay, Rocky, I guess so.
We ducked out the alley door. Down the street, we hailed a taxi and gave him the Pasha's address. As we weaved through the night traffic, wheels in my head ticked along with a cab meter. Everything added up like a traveling salesman's expense account. It fit now. I wouldn't be throwing any more books out of the window. There was a light in the office front as the cab pulled over to the curb.
What is it, please?
I'm looking for Ahmed Pasha. Is he here?
It's rather late. No, he's not in.
Do you mind if we step inside?
Well, very well. You are also from the police?
Rocky, maybe we better get out.
No, not exactly, sweetheart. Ahmed Pasha left a calling card at my place. I'm returning the call.
Then you are not the police?
No. When were the police here?
A while ago. I don't remember. Please, Ahmed Pasha is not here. I cannot help you. I have not seen him all afternoon.
Oh, just calm down. We'll make this short.
Please don't ask me any more questions. It is time to close the office. I must go home.
One thing more. Any idea where we could find him?
Perhaps at his hotel. That is all I know.
Oh, yeah, the Parner.
No. The Hotel Shepherd. Room 614.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure, that's it. Sorry to bother you. I watched the girl bolt the door behind us and pull the curtains. So Sam Sabaya had paid his respects to the Pasha after all. Didn't look like his luck was any better than mine. Timmy Rogers had something in his mind.
It's this way, Rock. The Pasha shows up in your cafe and I get shot at. Then he comes to the wedding and Lily gets killed. You know, Rock, I don't think I'm in a hurry to meet that Pasha again.
See what you mean.
Look, Rock, why not let Sabaya handle it? If you go up there to Ahmed Pasha's hotel, you don't know what might happen.
Timmy, I think you got something there. Maybe it would be a nice idea to have Sabaya along.
Sure thing, Rock. That's playing it smart.
Well, come on, we're wasting time.
And not we, Rocky. If Sabaya is checking on Ahmed Pasha, I'm next. I don't want any part of that police station. The last time I dropped in to see Sabaya, I stayed 30 days.
All right, see you around, Timmy.
Yeah, sure, Rock. See you around.
I found the nearest phone booth and dialed police headquarters. Sabaya was gone for the night. My next stop was the Cafe Tambourine. Nothing had turned up. Mike Sloan was still sitting behind the locked door to my office, and I left him there. That made it complete. There was only one item left on my list. Hotel Shepherd, room 614. The lobby of the Shepherd was teeming with a tourist trade. I strolled over to the main desk and waited for a pith-helmeted Englishman to collect his mail. Then I moved in.
Rocky Jordan, I say, it's good to see you again. Where you been?
Oh, usual places, Archie.
Ah, what's on your mind, Rocky?
Archie, you got a small favor.
Oh, Rocky, the last favor you asked of me almost cost me my position, yeah?
Oh, sorry to hear it. This one's going to be easy.
Oh, yes? What is it?
I want the key to room 614.
Really? Oh, no. Oh, now, Rocky. Well, there you go again.
Oh, this is important, Archie.
Oh, I can't do it, Rocky. Sorry, I'd really be discharged doing a trick like that. Besides, that's Ahmed Pasha's room. Don't you know that? Well, he's a permanent guest
Look,
here.
Look, Archie, I said it was important.
Oh, well, I'd like to, Rocky, but you know...
Thanks, Archie. I knew you'd help me out. Archie's a real friend. He made like he didn't even know I'd slipped him the 10th spot when he handed me the key. Being in Shepherd's was like old home week. When the little numbers on the door said 614, I stopped. This was the end of the line. I put the key in the lock. I gave the doorknob a quick turn, kicked the door open, and dived for the floor inside. When the shooting stopped, I reached back with my foot and kicked the door closed. In the thick darkness, I started crawling for the spot the shots had come from. I figured he wouldn't move, but I was wrong. I met him halfway. He didn't have time to shoot again. The lights came on, and in the doorway stood Ahmed Pasha, all cane and white gloves, the brown bowler resting neatly on his round head.
What is the meaning of this?
Right on time for the shooting. Maybe you'd like to meet the man who murdered Lily Karoff. Take a look.
Why?
That's right. The little fixer himself, Timmy Rogers.
Rocky Jordan will be back in just a moment. Now a note for you listeners. Remember, Rocky Jordan has joined one of the most outstanding mystery lineups in radio. Over your CBS station every Sunday night, you'll hear not only Rocky Jordan, but Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's Great Private Eye, and The Whistler, one of the most popular shows on the air. Remember this same time each Sunday night for Rocky Jordan. Now for the ending of tonight's story.
It was after midnight before Sam Sabaya and I could settle down back in my office at the Cafe Tambourine. They had taken Sloan's body away, and as usual, Sam wanted details.
Now, Jordan, about the Pasha's calling card.
I found Sloan dead with a card in his hand. It was Ahmed Pasha's, all right, but on the back there was an orange spot. The Pasha's too neat a guy to be passing out soiled calling cards. Besides, the color of the spot struck me. Where would you pick up an orange spot?
I haven't the slightest idea.
That's because you don't drink, Sam. Ever hear of a cocktail called an orange blossom? They're real fancy things made with orange sherbet and gin.
What has this orange blossom to do with the calling card?
Timmy Rogers was drinking one this afternoon when my bar got shut up. He must have picked up Posh's card off the bar after the shooting. What he didn't notice was that a little of his own drink had spilled on it.
Then he deliberately left the card in Mike Sloan's hand after killing him.
Sure. Timmy had it all set for Ahmed Pasha. Till I made him think Pasha knew something. That's when he got scared. He waited for Pasha in his hotel room, and when I came in, well, you know the rest. He fired at a swinging door.
So Timmy killed Lily and then Mike because Mike had seen him do it.
Now, the whole scheme was simple, Sam. It was Timmy's idea to set up the phony White Russian scare. That was to get Lily out of town so he and Mike could take over a money-making nightclub. They were going to buy her out for almost nothing. And at the same time, Timmy could square the $5,000 he owed the club.
A good scheme it was, too, Jordan. Except that Timmy Rogers lost his head and killed Lily when Ahmed Pasha threatened to expose them. Ahmed Pasha must have loved Lily very much, Jordan.
Lily, his little flower,
Do not make fun of his love, Jordan. Love is a serious business.
I guess I wouldn't know, Sam. I guess I wouldn't know.
Rocky Jordan is presented from Columbia Square in Hollywood and stars Jack Moyles in the title role. Tonight's story was written by Gomer Kuhl and William Frug, produced and directed by Cliff Howell, with original music by Milton Charles. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That does it for this episode of the Relic Radio Show. I hope you enjoyed the shows today. You can find more from Rocky Jordan, Suspense, past episodes of this podcast, alongside all the other shows at RelicRadio.com. There's also a Shoutcast stream there and our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows, would like to help out, please consider a donation. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is greatly appreciated, and it helps keep us on the air. Thank you, as always, to those who have donated. And thank you for joining me today. I'll talk to you again next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.